Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Zelda Universe Podcast, or as it's otherwise known, ZUcast, or as it's otherwise known, the ZU Podcast. I'm really not sure what name we're going with here. I'm Elias Thompson, and joining me as my co-host for this episode is fan favorite host, segment host, person to be annoyed by in general, Cody Davies. Cody, hello.
Hello. I'm so excited to meet a fellow segment hoster who produces segments that annoy a large group of people. It's always nice to see you, Elias.
I don't think my segments annoy people, per se. I think that they enlighten people to the possibilities that could have been.
That's what I always say. I'm always saying, look, I'm not trespassing in your house. I'm just enlightening you as to the possibilities of the universe. You know, it's completely different.
I think we're talking about two very different things here, but I'll let you have that, Cody.
So what kind of universal enlightenments have we got lined up for us today, Elias?
We have a full slate of high-quality Zelda-related programming for you. You're going to be talking about multiple versions of history, stuff in the next upcoming Zelda big hit game, as well as talking to other people about some things I don't want to spoil about. But I think the big thing we're all thinking about right now, Cody, is E3 and Nintendo's showing for E3. They're having yet another Direct for E3 this year after not having one last year.
E3 went through a little bit of strife for some obvious reasons, some less obvious reasons over the past year or two. Partly, obviously, holding a big convention in Los Angeles has not been viable.
That's true.
But also, they're a little bit of a disaster and have been leaking contact details of all of this attendance and all sorts of things. So E3 has been on a bit of rocky ground, but they're doing a weird new system this time, which is like online registration, and you go through the website, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't know how the whole vaccine thing would play out in the U.S. when they had to plan, so they planned it to be all online. We'll know a little more, because it'll probably have started by the time this podcast comes out, but it should be interesting to see, like, just how unnecessary a lot of the other stuff was.
Yeah, that's the thing, is a lot of E3 and a lot of things that have been happening in the games industry have been momentum based. Like, the reason it's still going isn't because it makes sense as such, it's more because everyone's like, well, we have been doing this and I guess we need a time to announce our game, so let's all do it. But it's gradually been falling apart a bit. Some of the major players have not been present for the last few years, but Nintendo will be giving us some updates through its Nintendo Direct that it has around E3 time. So we're looking forward to the big news on Zelda games, either Breath of the Wild 2, Skyward Sword HD, which comes out in July, or any other little surprises. There has been talk of, for example, the Wind Waker and Twilight Princess HD collection, because that was on Wii U and it just hasn't come to Switch yet. And it's an easy way for Nintendo to do their favorite thing, which is re-release the same game and make people pay for it again.
Yeah, some people even think Ocarina of Time or Majora's Mask might show up as a remaster.
It is the 35th anniversary. Not that Nintendo has mentioned it, but, you know, it would be nice.
Yeah. I mean, I think 25 is more of a landmark year, and they definitely mentioned it all over the place for that, but despite how spoiled I think some Zelda fans are, and by some I mean all, compared to Metroid fans, it's still not Mario, so.
Well, if you want Nintendo to remember Metroid's anniversaries, maybe that's a bit, you know, pie in the sky, but we can always hope.
They tweeted about the 25th anniversary. We got a tweet.
Oh, well, yeah. That is different.
So maybe we'll get, like, a Facebook post this year.
Oh, you're going up. Maybe they'll do a TikTok.
Well, I don't know if we can call that going up. Let's be real here. It's a step down, perhaps, or maybe just a lateral move. And then, of course, everyone and their aunt is talking about Switch Pro. Switch Pro is going to be announced this week. Oh, no, sorry. It's going to be announced this week now, this time.
It's been this week that it will be announced for approximately the last 5 years. The industry insiders are always talking about how the Switch Pro is coming, It's on its way, apparently, but it's just very... No one knows exactly when it will show up, but everyone's convinced that it is showing up at some point.
Totally showing up. If not this week, then in the future. But, you know, I think we've rambled on long enough about games we are looking forward to coming up in the future. At least we hope come in the future. I think we should take a moment, though, to reflect on our past and reflect on Zelda history. In particular, the years 1996 through 2000 as Zelda Universe Webmaster, as they like to call themselves, Shona, takes a deep dive into what happened between those years.
Hey Zelda fans, my name is Shona, and in recent episodes I've been travelling back in time and exploring Zelda history through the years to celebrate the franchise's 35th anniversary. In this episode, we'll be revisiting the years 1996 through 2000. The early 90s were a boom period for Zelda, but the mid-90s actually saw a pretty long drought in between releases of mainline Zelda games. After 1993, the next game wasn't released until 1998. So, is it even worth covering 96 and 97 in this segment? Well, if you lived in Japan, you had the option of playing more broadcast satellite Zelda games via the Satellaview add-on for the Super Famicom. These included Triforce of the Gods and the Ancient Stone Tablets. Triforce of the Gods was a port of A Link to the Past, which could be downloaded for free. Ancient Stone Tablets was a four-part game that could only be played once a week for 60 minutes during the broadcast window. It was somewhat of a sequel to A Link to the Past, taking place in the same world, but with a new story, hero, and dungeons. The playable character is not Link, but the male or female avatar for the Satellaview, who becomes known as the Hero of Light. It was broadcast twice in 1997 and once in 1998. So the Great Zelda Drought ended in 1998 with the release of The Legend of Zelda: Ocarina of Time on the Nintendo 64. Ocarina of Time is the fifth main Zelda title and was highly anticipated after being showcased at trade shows and in magazines. It's fair to say that Ocarina of Time didn't just live up to the hype, it far surpassed it, and to this day is still considered one of the greatest games of all time. Ocarina of Time was the first Zelda game with 3D graphics. Zelda handled the jump from 2D to 3D exceptionally well, setting many standards for not only the Zelda series, but 3D games to come. One big challenge for early 3D games was camera control and depth perception. Ocarina of Time solved this with the use of Z-targeting, which would lock both Link and the camera in the direction of a target, or center the camera behind Link if no target was in range. Ocarina of Time also had a much bigger story than its predecessors. Among other things, it explored the origin of Ganon, gave Link a bigger backstory, Zelda herself had a much bigger role, and it even went into detail about the creation of Hyrule. It expanded Hyrule's population with more friendly races, such as the Gorons, friendly Zoras, Kikiri, Gerudo, and the Sheikah. Many of these have become Zelda mainstays or appeared in future games. The impact of Ocarina was such that it cemented a formula that was to be used in many Zelda games for years to come. 1998 was also the year that the Ocarina of Time manga by Akira Himakawa was released. Akira Himakawa is well known today for producing many volumes of manga based on various games in the franchise, but it wouldn't be released in English for another 10 years. Finally, shortly after Ocarina of Time, Nintendo released a colour version of Link's Awakening for the Game Boy Color. Called Link's Awakening DX, it added a few new features to the original game, including a new dungeon and Game Boy camera and printer functionality. Moving on to 1999, Nintendo released a brand new fighting game which pitted some of its most popular characters against each other, such as Mario, Donkey Kong, and Pikachu. Link was a natural inclusion in this game, and the only Zelda character to appear in the roster of 12 fighters. The game? Super Smash Bros., which has since become an incredibly popular franchise in its own right. Ocarina of Time was one of the few Zelda games to get a direct sequel, with Majora's Mask, which released in 2000. It reused the same engine and many of the character models as Ocarina, but the game itself couldn't be more different. It takes Link out of Hyrule and into Termina, a dark and mysterious land in danger of imminent destruction from the moon, which is going to fall in 3 days. Players are given a 3-day in-game clock in which to save Termina, along with the ability to go back in time to the beginning of the 3-day cycle. This 3-day cycle was about an hour of real-time play, and is a gameplay mechanic that divided fans, with some finding it stressful. However, it allowed for a much more detailed world and characters. NPCs had schedules, doing different things in different places across the 3-day cycle. Link was able to help many of these characters, often needing to do the right thing at the right time in order to change their outcome. The game's story was much deeper as well. To this day, Majora's Mask is still considered one of the most unique Zelda titles. If you'd like to hear more about Majora's Mask, we released a special episode of this podcast in September 2020, which celebrated the game's 20th anniversary, so make sure you check it out and have a listen. There was one more surprise for fans in 2000. Nintendo's next console, the GameCube, was in development, and so Nintendo was keen to market it. As part of this, they showed a short video that depicted a sword fight between Link and Ganondorf. At the time, the graphics blew everyone away, far more realistic than those on the Nintendo 64. Suddenly, everyone was eager to get their hands on the GameCube and for the Zelda game that would be on it. But when Nintendo revealed the actual GameCube Zelda game the following year, it caused a huge shock in the community. Why? Well, you'll have to wait until my next segment to find out. I'd love to hear your memories from this era, so please share them in the comments. For me personally, Ocarina of Time had a huge impact on my life. The game completely drew me in and blew me away, and it turned me from someone who likes Zelda games a lot into a huge fangirl who started her own website. You see, Ocarina of Time's release also coincided with the rise of the mainstream internet in the mid to late 90s. Websites and message boards dedicated to Zelda sprung up, allowing fans across the world to connect and share information. This meant that rumours and hoaxes were also spread about things such as being able to get the Triforce in Ocarina of Time, or that it was possible to beat the Marathon Man. Forums lit up with debates about Sheik's gender, whether or not the Link in each Zelda game was the same Link or not, and which of the many characters in Ocarina of Time Link should become romantically involved with. These early days of the Zelda community were a pretty magical time for me. Join me next time as we look at the first half of the 2000s. I'm Shona Johnson, and until then, I leave you with some words of wisdom from Sheik in Ocarina of Time, which seem pretty fitting for this trip down memory lane. The flow of time is always cruel. Its speed seems different for each person, but no one can change it. A thing that does not change with time is a memory of younger days.
Thanks, Shona. Ocarina of Time was my first Zelda game, and I remember getting the Nintendo 64. We actually rented it from Blockbuster before we got the game, but we were like, a week is not enough for this game. We're going to have to just go ahead and buy it.
Did you have to keep renting it week after week like I did?
I think we did like 1 week of renewals, and then we were like, look, this is
going to... We're burning money here.
We need this for like a year, so... we're gonna just have to get the game. But yeah, was this your first Zelda game, Elias, or Ocarina of Time?
I more or less count it as my first. I think that when I was younger, I had touched A Link to the Past in a little Super Nintendo kiosk that was set up in the Bally's Total Fitness Daycare. But I didn't really know what I was playing. So Ocarina, it's very similar. Blockbuster kept renting it. Eventually, I think the parents bought it. And that was the first one I had sat down and played through and was like, this is Zelda. Still no Twilight Princess, though.
Well, you know, from little things, big things grow, Elias.
Yeah, I mean, Twilight Princess would not have been as good as it was without Ocarina of Time being there to iron out the kinks, as it were.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that, aside from the fact that I have Twilight Princess below Ocarina of Time on my list, but...
It's okay to be wrong sometimes, Cody. It's fine.
You know, it's just a game. It's not my favorite. It's not my favorite Wii game where you play as a wolf who solves puzzles in a dungeon, but...
You heard it here first. Cody Davies called Twilight Princess, it's a game.
That's right. It's true. It is a game. It is, I believe, a Wii game, would you say, Elias?
It was originally a Wii game, yes. First came out on the Nintendo Wii. I found this fact out the other day, actually. The internal timestamps on the code for when the builds were finished, it's earlier on the Wii version than the GameCube version.
That's right. So the GameCube version is actually the reversed version.
Yeah, it's secondary.
It's the mirrored version, yeah.
Supplementary to the Wii version.
That's right.
You've all listened and sat and understood. I don't know what you're doing while listening to this podcast. Me and Cody rant on about Twilight Princess and rant on about what we're maybe looking forward to or expecting or not expecting in E3. But just to get a little bit more perspective and extra insight into these topics, we've invited, actually, a couple of other podcast hosts that you may know of. They are not from this podcast, but another one. Some even have hot takes on Twilight Princess.
We are here with Andy and Allison from ZeldaDungeon.net, your number one website for Zelda. Welcome.
Hi.
Thanks. Thanks for having us, guys.
Anytime.
I can tell you mean that.
There's a certain sincerity to my voice. That's unmistakable.
It's unmistakable, all right.
Elias's voice is very unmistakable. So, let's start off. Tell us a bit more about yourself. How did you get involved in the Zelda community?
What do you think, Al? Do you want to take the lead here?
Sure. I didn't get super involved in the Zelda community until 2015, very early 2015. I'd just gotten out of the military and I was looking for something to do, some friends to make, that sort of thing, and decided to be a writer at Zelda Dungeon. And so I started there, and for the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years that it's been, I've been doing odds and ends there, some podcasting, some copy editing, some streaming, all sorts. So that's how I got into the Zelda community, and I love it. Some of my best friends are here, so.
You're selling yourself short there, Al. You are the site's top copy editor. So any post that you see at Zelda Dungeon probably has Allison's fingerprints on it. And the co-host of the Champions Cast who really stabilized the show. So that's lots of stuff that Al does. I am kind of the same story. I got involved in the Zelda community. I applied to Zelda Dungeon after the Game Awards in 2016 when they showed the latest Breath of the Wild trailer. I was just like, yeah, I want to write about this. I've always loved Zelda, so I wanted to write about it. And so, yeah, I applied, and I think I used a writing sample defending Batman versus Superman to show that I could write. And they accepted me, which was funny. So they brought me in, and a couple years later, Allison and I now host the Champions Cast, and I serve as the site's editor-in-chief. So it's been a fun ride.
And how long has the Champions Cast been going?
Oh, man. So we had a podcast called the Zelda Informer Podcast, which used to be affiliated with Zelda Dungeon. And that kind of went on a little bit of a hiatus at around, I don't know, mid-2017. Early 2018, I decided that I wanted to relaunch the podcast because I had had some previous podcasting experience. So I want to say it was about February of 2018 that we relaunched the show. We branded it the Champions Cast because at the time, the Champions Ballad was just coming out. So it's been 3+ years strong right now. We just had episode 150 a couple months ago, which was the latest, I guess, landmark episode for the show. So yeah, it's been quite the ride the last 3 years doing this podcast.
So I hear that you and Elias have been hanging out, all three of you, in the past, have been going out, drinking together, having a great time.
We just met up last weekend, yeah.
We hang out all the time.
yeah, to be clear, not right now. They're not wandering about the town right in this current situation. But I believe, Elias, you were at the Zelda Dungeon Marathon.
I was at an Zelda Dungeon Marathon, yes, in the year of 2019.
Yeah, yes. Baby.
I was fortunate enough to be invited to it by the head of Zelda Dungeon, otherwise known as Mossy's the Great. Yes. I think it's his username.
No, he changed it now. He's not the Great anymore. He's just Mossy Segopian.
He's just the Good?
He's not even anything anymore. He's just Mossy's. We met in the year of 2019 at the Zelda Dungeon Marathon, and we were like, who's this Zelda universe guy here? But by the end, I was just like, all right, he's one of us. He's cool. You know what? It helps because one of Elias's redeeming qualities is that he's a big Metroid guy, and I'm a big Metroid guy. So that was something to bond over.
Nothing brings Zelda fans together like Metroid, I find.
Indeed, yes.
Oh, yeah. We were all in the same hotel room watching the announcements of E3 when Metroid Prime 4 was announced. Mm. And, you know, it was the most excited that anyone's ever seen Elias.
Yeah. Oh, man.
It was not filmed.
You didn't film it? Oh, you'll like this. Allison and I made a bet today about, we had some E3 predictions on the show. And if she loses, she's going to play Super Metroid for the first time.
Oh, what does she have to do to lose so that I can help make this happen?
Breath of the Wild 2 has to be shown at E3 this year.
You don't think it's going to happen?
She doesn't think it's going to happen.
Okay. I feel safe with that. I feel confident that she'll be playing Super Metroid.
Yeah, she's going to be playing Super Metroid. And I can't wait. I'm going to be there every step of the way.
We shall see.
So, speaking of E3, we'll see whether this podcast is out before or after we hear the E3 news, but...
Zelda Universe podcast has a very different turnover time than the Zelda Dungeon podcast.
Let's get your predictions. Memorize forever in a time capsule. What do you think, Allison, that Nintendo will show at E3?
Let's see. We had a good long discussion about it today. I said that Breath of the Wild 2 would not be shown, that we would get more footage of Skyward Sword, and that fast travel would be shown without the amiibo, just a different type of fast travel. So that way people could stop being grumpuses about it. And then possibly a new amiibo. I'm looking for a Tarico amiibo because, you know, Age of Calamity DLC is coming out. So I'm hoping for Tarico. I think that'd be really cool.
Give him your bonkers prediction. So we had a stipulation that was like, most of the stuff that we thought would happen could feasibly happen, but we each had like one bonkers prediction that is like a 1 in a million chance. But if it did happen...
Hallelujah. Okay, so this is my bonkers prediction. I would love to see this happen, but I highly doubt it would. When I was a kid, I got the GameCube Collector's Edition of Zelda, which had Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, Zelda 1 and 2. So I think for 35th anniversary Zelda, we should get another collector's edition for the Switch, and it would be Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, Twilight Princess HD, and Wind Waker HD, all ported to the Switch.
Bold claims.
That's bold.
That's my bonkers idea.
And Andy, what are your theories?
Yeah, what's your bonkers prediction?
All right, so my bonkers prediction is that I think for the 35th anniversary, you know how they've been doing like Pac-Man 99 and Super Mario Bros. Battle Royale or whatever? I think that they're going to do something similar for Zelda. And I think it's going to be Four Swords Adventures. And I think they're going to release Four Swords Adventures, but online with co-op play.
99 Swords Adventures.
Something. Like, give me Four Swords. It's a multiplayer game. I don't care if it's a port or if it's like a reimagining or whatever. Just like, give me Four Swords online co-op play. Let's go. That was my bonkers prediction. I don't think it's going to happen, but that'd be pretty sweet if it did.
Those are pretty nice dreams.
Some other predictions. Shadow drop of the DLC for Age of Calamity. I think it's coming out that day. A new 2D Metroid, I think, is going to be shown. So that's kind of cool. I think there's going to be more Zelda 35th anniversary amiibo. I think we're going to get a new Smash character. Maybe Ryu, Hayabusa. I think that's a pretty safe bet. I think that where there's smoke, there's fire. It makes a lot of sense. And nobody would hate that, too, which is nice. And the last thing, of course, is Breath of the Wild. I think they're going to end the Direct with Breath of the Wild. It's going to be a new trailer. It's going to be the subtitle. And if we're really lucky, it's going to be a release date, which I think is going to be in March of 2022. So, yeah, that was what I hedged my bets on.
Cody, what's your bonkers prediction for E3?
Well, let's see. How about that we get Tingle VR?
Oh my god.
That would be awesome.
Tingle VR, I love it.
It's Tingle Earth. It's like Google Earth, except you're in a balloon.
Tingle Earth?
You know what would be so, so sweet? Is if Nintendo, if Big Daddy Nintendo is just like, here is your Too Much Tingle pack. You got Rupee Land. You got Balloon Trip.
You've even got
Balloon Fight. Because those are great. Those are great games, and people should experience them. That would be cool.
It would be something.
Yeah, look, these are games that I think I'm the only one here for whom the Tingle games were legally released in my territory. So
legally released.
Yeah.
They just didn't get a US release at all. So sadly,
it is too bad.
I mean, I think they rightfully so. I think they just said in interviews, too, that they have the perception that Americans don't like Tingle.
Why?
Probably because of people like me.
The Tingle in these games is not the same Tingle in the rest of the Zelda games. He's much more provocative. Could be a nice word to use.
There's a lot going on with Tingle. And what's your bonkers prediction then, Elias?
Oh, that's easy. That we get any form of Metroid news whatsoever.
Oh, come on. Don't be such a pessimist.
Well, good luck with that one. yeah, look, I thought mine was a little wild, but...
There's a lot. So, yeah, we might get a teaser for Prime 4, but there's been a lot of sources saying something with the 2D Metroid, so I wouldn't be surprised. But year after year, I have had to close my heart every E3 for hopes of Metroid, because 9 times out of 10, it just leads to heartbreak.
I'm ready to get my heart broken again. I'm hopeful, optimistic. I'm ready.
And I love that about you, Andy. You're the light. You're the Metroid light in my life.
Oh, wow. Andy, what would they do? What would you do if it was no Breath of the Wild 2, no Metroid, and instead of Four Swords Adventures, they say Triforce Heroes is online Switch?
I think I would just like shut my computer off and turn off my Switch, probably never turn them back on. I'd probably just go into the woods for a couple days and, I don't know, find a tree or something. Yeah. I'd go find a bridge to sleep under.
Wow. Going full troll.
99 Force Heroes. So, coming out soon, and unless something goes horribly wrong with our production cycle, this podcast will come out before the release of Skyward Sword HD. Let's talk about that. Do you have any particular thoughts on, are there any changes that you'd like to see or whatever that you're hoping would get announced for Skyward Sword HD?
I think we're pretty much both on the same page, Al, so you take it away.
Okay. We both really love Skyward Sword. It's like, it's my favorite game, and I think it's Andy's like second favorite. Mm-hmm. And I speedrun Skyward Sword, so there's plenty of like quality of life changes I'd love to see. For example, skipping cutscenes in like regular mode and having hero mode available right off the bat instead of having to play regular mode. Fast travel between the statues
is a must.
Yeah, obviously they're gonna have the amiibo fast travel, but like it's such a staple for Zelda to have statues or whatever have fast travel, so it doesn't make any sense to me for them not to. I'd be very disappointed. Also, whenever you get an item, they don't need to tell you, hey, you picked up this, or hey, you picked up 5 rubies, like, or rupees every time you do it, which they do in Skyward Sword, the original. So, yeah, that's what I'm hoping for.
No more telling you that your batteries are running out. You know what? The biggest thing that Skyward Sword HD needs to do, the biggest thing it needed to do was what they've already done with motion controls, because there are so many people that I've seen that are just like, you know what, I hate motion controls, and now that I don't have to use them, I'll give it a shot. So I think that was the biggest thing they had to do, and they accomplished that, and that's great. The second thing that I feel like they have to do is fast travel between those Lawfwing statues, because like, if you're in Lanayru and you want to go to the Faerun Woods, like, you got to go up through the sky, fly your Lawfwing over, go back down, and hopefully you're there within 15 real world minutes. Whereas like, if you just use the bird statues, like in Breath of the Wild, like you use shrines, I think that will really kind of quicken up some of the parts of the game. And yeah, like Allison said, like, you don't need to know about the stick that you just picked up for like the 100th time in the game. Like, you probably already got a good idea about what it does or whatever. Yeah, I think that those, honestly, I think that that's the big one, and anything else on top of that is gravy.
What I'd like to see is potentially similar to what they did with the Wind Waker HD, which is, I think the back third or so of Skyward Sword is the weakest and has a bit of filler in there.
Mm.
And it would be nice to sort of smooth that over a little bit.
Yeah.
I can agree with that.
Cram as many quality of life improvements as you can.
Just delete the water dragon. Just say water dragon, go home.
Who is that?
Oh, if we're deleting whole portions of the game, I got a list.
There's no no water sections where you're collecting little music tadpoles. It's gone.
Tadtones.
Oh, that's fun. Come on.
Radtones.
That's a fun time.
You're talking to Skyward Sword super fans here, Cody. You gotta watch out.
Look, Skyward Sword, it's a good video game. The water dragon, I don't trust. The water dragon thinks...
What is your beef with the water dragon?
He's got that look on his face. He's not a trustworthy guy.
The water dragon thinks that the best solution to, like, a few, you know, bokoblins or whatever coming to the forest is to drown the entire forest, killing everything inside it, and then introduces a shark problem.
Wow.
So, like, it's just not a very trustworthy dragon. Like, out of the dragons, it's down at the bottom, the water dragon.
Got you.
He gave the Tadtones a chance to live. He brought them life, so does that not equal them out? No, you know what? If we're talking, like serious, like, completely restructural things that Skyward Sword can change, I will defend Skyward Sword till the day I die. But I think that one thing that you could... probably everybody can agree on, the biggest fans, is like the imprisoned fights. Is three of them is probably too much. If you could zap out the middle one and I don't know, fill it with anything else.
The middle one's the worst.
Yeah, it's the worst. But I think that that's probably asking a bit too much. You know what would be cool actually is if you could get an item that was similar to Swift Sail, but for your Lawfwing, so that, because like, flying the Lawfwing is kind of weird, like, because I can't even remember the motion you do on the Wii, but it's kind of weird.
You have to, like, flap with the Wiimote or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's uncomfortable, and I just want to, like, I just want to use my thumb and slightly nudge my joystick forward, and, like, that's where I'm flying, you know? So that could be easy to do. Maybe they could have something like that. Maybe Swift Sail could come back.
They introduced a motorbike to Breath of the Wild, so what if they introduced, like, a
Motorbird.
Fighter plane to Skyward Sword?
I'm down.
I love it.
Yeah, I would actually like Skyward Sword a lot more if they did that.
That would be awesome. And I say that unironically. Like, some people are very defensive about their Zelda, and we're just like, oh, a motorcycle and Breath of the Wild? I'm just like, sweet. I love it. That's great.
Yeah.
Give me a fighter plane.
No, it's great. Random out of place technology is a staple of the Zelda series. They had elevators in Zelda 2, and then...
They did. I never thought of that.
The hookshot is like future Batman technology, so...
I love it.
Why not?
Just do it.
So, if you were to list your top three Zelda games, what would they be?
Do you go first, Sandy?
Allison... No, I'm going to list yours, and you can list mine.
Oh, crap.
Let's see how well we know each other here. Okay, so Allison's number one favorite Zelda game is Skyward Sword, without a doubt. Her second favorite Zelda game is Breath of the Wild, and if you ask her favorite location in Zelda, she's going to say Satori Mountain. And her third favorite Zelda game, I think it would be The Wind Waker, although Phantom Hourglass might be somewhat up there. Did I get that right, Al?
No.
Oh, man. What did I get wrong?
Skyward Sword's right. Satori Mountain is right. Ocarina of Time, then Breath of the Wild.
Okay. Well, so I got 2 out of 3. That's not bad.
Yes. Okay. Andy's are Ocarina of Time, Skyward Sword.
Yes.
And his third?
Come on.
I'm gonna say Breath of the Wild also.
No. My third would be the Minish Cap, which is the best.
What? I didn't know it was that high up on your list.
The best 2D Zelda is the Minish Cap. That is such a great and underrated Zelda game.
We should have had more Game Boy Advance Zeldas.
Yes. Yeah, Minish Cap.
It's one of the best Zeldas for the Game Boy Advance.
Wow.
For some reason, I was putting Minish Cap at your like number 5 or something.
No, I legitimately really love the Minish Cap. Like, Breath of the Wild is a better video game. I don't think that there's any arguing that. But like, there's something about the Minish Cap that's just like so whimsical, so charming. Yeah, it's just like it's got everything you could want in a Zelda game. And you know what the thing about the Minish Cap is that there's not too much of a good thing. There's only 5 dungeons in that game, so, and there's not like 8 like there is in Oracles or whatever, and 8 is too much, and they all start to blend together. You got 5 in the Minish Cap.
Says the person with Ocarina of Time at the top.
Well, hold on, because Ocarina of Time, Elias, Ocarina of Time has like different themed dungeons, and it's harder to do that in a 2D setting.
Okay.
Twilight Princess is a game that has too many dungeons. That's an example of what I'm talking about.
That's right. They should get rid of all the dungeons.
We don't have enough time in this segment for me to engage with that hook.
I was waiting.
We don't need to get into the Twilight Princess thing.
by the way, Ilya sucks.
We have someone at Zelda Universe who will be very happy to hear that.
Ilya, she is the absolute worst. I'm so sorry.
Look, maybe we'll invite you back for a future discussion entirely about Twilight Princess.
A discussion.
Because
that's going to be a fight, yeah. Right there.
The entire podcast.
So tell me then, Allison, what are Andy's 3 least favorite Zelda games?
Ooh.
Oh, this is easy.
Okay, definitely Triforce Heroes, Phantom Hourglass, and the third? Ooh. Twilight Princess, probably.
You know what? I think I would put Spirit Tracks ahead of Twilight Princess in terms of how much I dislike it. Because it's gotcha. It's just like those DS controls with the stylus. They're horrible.
It's bad.
And which is kind of too bad because there's like a decent game under there, but like playing it just sucks. And then, yeah, Triforce Heroes is just a blight on the name of Zelda. It's no good. It's no good.
It's no good.
You don't want to spend time in Fashionista Hyrule. I forget what it's called. Hytopia. That's it.
Yeah.
Ugh. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Isn't it?
It was something like that.
Who knows anymore?
If it wasn't, it is now. It's the power of the ZU cast. I don't even remember what the podcast is called. I'm just the talent.
Doing a great job, Elias.
And Andy, what are Allison's 3 least favorite Zelda games?
Adventure of Link. Wow, this is tough because she likes the DS games and she hasn't played Spirit Tracks. And she likes the N64 games. And I feel like you like the 2D games. What other games are there for you to dislike? Adventure of Link is at the bottom. I know that. Let's see. I compile like all of the Zelda Dungeon staff's lists every year to make like a big kind of master list too. So you think I should know this, but I'm going to say the original Legend of Zelda is probably there. And, God, I'm dying here, Al. I don't know. Link to the Past.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
But the first two are right.
I don't know.
Just guessing.
You just listed the 3 oldest games.
I don't know.
Yeah, my bottom 3 are Adventure of Link, OG Legend of Zelda, only because I just don't enjoy playing it. I really respect it, though. Last one used to be Oracle of Seasons, but we recently replayed those, and I actually really, really like it. So that's gotten moved up. So 4 Swords would be next.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I should have known that. That's fair.
All 3 of those are pretty low on my list as well, actually. I'm also a young person. I'm only 31. So I grew up on Ocarina of Time. And then going back to the old games, I was like, well, it's not moving like I want it to. But they're definitely games that are are really conceptually interesting, but I wouldn't go back and I don't have the nostalgia to go back and play them and think, oh, what, I remember this, because I don't remember it, playing it as a child. So, well, I think that's it for today. Do you have anything to plug?
Ooh, Andy, master of plugs. Go for it.
All right, let's do it. Yeah, you can check Allison and I out over on Twitter at Spiteri316 and at Allison Aletha. And of course, the Champions Cast is available wherever you get your podcasts. So iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, like and subscribe. And we also have a Twitch channel too that we're going to be live streaming E3 on. And we're going to be doing some other stuff for Linktober CreatorCon or whatever. So you can check that out as well if you want to do that. Yeah, I think that's it. I think that's all.
Great. Well, there's a great episode of the Champions Cast, actually, that that I really like because I'm in it.
Yeah.
And it's about questions on A Link Between Worlds. So if people want to have a look at that, they can.
Oh, yeah, that was a fun time.
Was one of the questions, and this is going to show the fact that I didn't listen to that episode, but was one of the questions that how did it feel when Zelda Universe representative beat the Zelda Dungeon representatives at their own marathon in that game?
All right, end the show.
We did get into a little bit of an argument over the graphics and whether they were good or not, but...
Oh, yeah, these two. Oh, my gosh. Okay, I'll just get all heated up.
I think we called them stinky, and Allison was like, no, they're great.
Well, for more exciting Allison and Andy antics, you can check them out at the Champions Cast, and we'll see you around.
Bye.
All right, boys, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
It's always good to talk to the people over at Zelda Dungeon.
They're a fun crowd.
Yeah, I do like to sometimes talk to Marcy's, who's their owner. Sorry, who's the site's owner? He's.
How do you think their staff structure works over there, Cody?
Website's owner, Marcy's Agopian. I do like to talk to him, invite him onto my streams. He's an expert at walkthroughs and guides, and he's done a chunk of them for their website. And so I like to invite him to my stream where I don't make any progress. And it makes him very, very frustrated to watch.
Honestly, it makes me frustrated to watch, too.
It is a fan favorite segment of the ZU Marathon. People love the Cody Zone. They love to see me digging holes for 8 hours in Oracle of Seasons. It's just it's a great time for everyone, I think.
Doubt. Press X to doubt.
So, speaking of the ZU Marathon, how is that going? We've got that coming up this year, don't we?
We have it coming up again this year, yeah. We made an announcement, I want to say, a couple months ago at this point. Z-Thon's returning 2021 in August, as per usual. Fortunately, COVID is in a better place now than it was this time last year. And so we're able to plan like a little bit more of a meetup thing while still offering like remote possibilities for people. It should still be the same fun event, and hopefully you'll get to see more in-person interaction, which is always fun. Of course, we'll always have guests, fun, fresh takes on Zelda video games that do not include Shovel Percent, as some people like to call it, all while raising money once again for Direct Relief and their COVID-19 pandemic response. So... planning is still undergoing. I can't give you too many more details about that at this time, but I hope you're looking forward to it, Cody.
I am looking forward to it, Elias. Every year, it's my regular show over on Twitch. And by regular, I mean is
annual.
It happens consistently once a year, which is a little less than most Twitch streamers tend to stream, but I do have a consistent schedule. People know when I'm going to show up, you know? They put it in their calendar. They're like, all right, this time a year from now, I got to watch Cody's stream.
I can think of at least one person in Facebook comments that does that. I don't know if there's multiple people.
Look, people show up to my stream. They donate during the segment. It's usually to get me to make progress and to stop shoveling.
Yeah, it is. Sure is. I have many doubts about your continued involvement, but... it seems to work. You know, Z-Thon is a fun time, whether you're digging holes or doing
Twilight Princess minigames or whatever other shenanigans happen.
Or dying against Phantom Ganon a whole lot because you were on the Wii U Virtual Console version of Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, moral of the story, never play the Wii U ports of Zelda games. Well, at least on Virtual Console. For Nintendo 64 games. Anyway, it's fun to play your favorite Zelda games and reminisce a past way to nostalgia. But it's also fun to look forward to upcoming brand new Zelda games, getting to immerse yourself in a whole new Zelda experience. And at some point in the future, we're going to have that opportunity with the sequel to Breath of the Wild. Turns out, podcast regulars, Zelda Ann and Realm Wings, have taken the time earlier to discuss what they're actually looking forward to in the Breath of the Wild sequel. In particular, some of the things they'd like to see with the dungeons, or perhaps lack thereof, in the game.
Welcome, welcome, mortals, to The Zelda Realm. I am The Zelda Ann.
And I'm Realm.
Now, welcome to this awesome segment. We actually have an interesting subject that we're going to be talking about today. We are going to be talking about Breath of the Wild 2, but with the dungeons this time. So, Realm, what kind of dungeons would you like to have in the next game?
Well, one of the things I have been thinking about the most when I think about the new dungeons for Breath of the Wild 2 has been both what dungeons in the past I've really liked and what ones I found a little bit lacking. And so while I think, like a lot of people, I really hope we get some traditional dungeons, some old school Zelda dungeons, I really do have some reservations about that. First of all, I'd really like them to stay away from elemental dungeon types that are really basic, like just a water dungeon or a fire dungeon or an earth dungeon. I think that, you know, not to say that dungeons based on those concepts can't be good. I think Spirit Tracks' dungeons are really great, even if they're kind of boring in theming. But I think Breath of the Wild has such an incredibly unique world. I would really like if they had a little bit more personality. Stuff like the Snowpeak Ruins in Twilight Princess, or the Ancient Cistern in Skyward Sword. Even if technically they might not be the most amazing dungeons gameplay-wise, really stick in your mind because they have such unique concepts. And so I'd really like to see that reflected in the new game.
Oh yeah, I'm kind of there with you personally. I kind of want a little bit of traditional dungeons. Like, I kind of do want to see like a temple, or kind of like what you ended up mentioning with Twilight Princess. Like, maybe have like a mansion in a particular area where it's cold or where it's in the volcano, just so that you can kind of know where the dungeons are. But I can definitely understand, like, yeah, we definitely need more personality to the next game. Because right now, we've just got a bunch of shrines that are so similar. We've got bosses that are so similar. And it ends up almost becoming like a drag. You just, okay, I've got to go to this divine beast. I've got to go and beat this boss that basically looks the same as the other bosses. Yeah, they do have different kind of elemental abilities, but I still feel like they're almost the exact same boss. I want to fight something that is unique in its area. Kind of like from Ocarina of Time, where we have those different bosses from different areas that they're unique. I personally would love to have just some more uniqueness instead of the same thing over and over and over again. It just ends up kind of like what I ended up saying, it becomes a drag, and you just kind of like, okay, I gotta go do this again. You know what I mean?
No, you're 100% correct, especially about the bosses in Breath of the Wild. You know, while all of those bosses and dungeons technically do have differences to them, no one is really going to be able to tell you exactly what those differences are. No one's going to really be able to very easily describe what the big difference between the boss of Va Meadow or Va Naboris is. I think that that, of course, also extends to the Divine Beasts themselves, in that they're a little bit samey. And I've actually, I think, talked about this before a little bit, but it's really actually kind of sad to me that they decided to do the Divine Beasts in the way they did, having four dungeons that were kind of the same thing, because I think that the Divine Beast is such a cool idea for a dungeon, and if this had been a game like Twilight Princess, where there was like five or so other dungeons, and the Divine Beast was just one of them, there was only one Divine Beast, I think it would be people's favorite. Like, I think it would genuinely be considered one of the better dungeons in the series, because, you know, as a standalone thing, it's a really awesome idea. But unfortunately, people just kind of got turned off to the aesthetics of them and to the way they worked because they just had to do them so many times.
Oh, absolutely. And kind of like what you ended up saying, dealing with the just one Divine Beast. I mean, you can kind of go off to where it's not just a dungeon, but it's like almost like a pre-dungeon. And you have to like get like a certain item from that pre-dungeon. Like, for instance, you can go into a Divine Beast and you have to like get a certain key, or you have to get like, I don't know, the water boots. So you can actually go and explore Lake Hylia to get into the dungeon. Instead of just it being the same beast over and over again, even though one may be bigger than the other, it's still very repetitive. But have it be just like a pre-dungeon where you just retrieve the item and you can actually just hurry up, get the pre-dungeon done, and actually go into the regular dungeon. And actually, speaking of that, since I ended up bringing the water boots, we can also bring back the traditional weapons in the traditional dungeons. Like, for instance, like what I said, the water boots. So we can actually go and explore the Lake Hylia region. Or we can go and explore the different kinds of rivers that are out there. Kind of like what we ended up talking in the previous episode, it will open up so much more in the map.
That is 100% correct. I mean, you have a lot of good points that I'd like to address them all. But for one, your ideas about the pre-dungeon, I think, are really good. Because, you know, I think one thing Breath of the Wild did do pretty well in certain areas, like Va Naboris' quest specifically, was really making it feel like a kind of monumentous thing when you actually ended up in the dungeon. There was a lot of build-up. It, like, it felt like an important thing. And I think having those kinds of pre-dungeon kind of things is a good way of doing that. Also, the items. Yes, I really want more traditional items back in the games. And I understand the kind of desire with Breath of the Wild to give you pretty much all of the tools you would need at the very beginning with the Great Plateau Shrines. Like the kinds of things you would typically get over four or five dungeons in other games. But I really do think, contrary to what a lot of people have said, that traditional items could work in a Breath of the Wild type setting. Because really, what I think a lot of people don't realize is that the runes just are traditional items. They're just kind of packaged in a different way. You could just use bombs, and this isn't even the first time you've had unlimited bombs in a Zelda game before. A Link Between Worlds did the exact same thing, just using stamina, whereas Breath of the Wild has a more traditional cooldown timer. With the Cryonis ability, that would be an item ability. With the Magnesis, with Stasis, all of those things are just things items would do in other games. And so I don't see it at all unreasonable that Breath of the Wild 2 could just feature more traditional key items like previous games have had.
So what kind of traditional items do you think should be in the game? For me personally, I would like to kind of like what I said, the water boots. So it would have more exploration. I personally would like to see the hookshot too, to kind of help with the climbing. Don't get me wrong, I like the climbing, but in certain areas it gets obnoxious, especially when it starts raining. The rain can just get so annoying, but when you have the ability of the hookshot to be able to get up there quicker, I think that would actually be kind of a bonus to have.
No, definitely. As far as items I think should be in, I think there are definitely certain items that could get a second shot in a new game that kind of didn't really, I don't think, get a fair chance in the game they came from. And one of those items, I think, is the spinner from Twilight Princess. It probably couldn't work in exactly the same way it does in that game. But what if you could just use it to kind of go along any wall if you decided to pull it out? So you could just kind of use it to go parallel to any kind of cliff face you actually wanted to travel along. I think that using the spinner as more of an exploration item and rather than a kind of one-off or two-off puzzle item would actually kind of give it a second life and would work way better than it did in the original.
Oh yeah, that poor item was almost useless. I know it's a video game and I know it's an item, but I still felt bad for it because it just was only used in one particular area and it felt almost useless, and it's such a cool item. I mean, I feel like Hyrule Warriors did a better job with the spinner than poor Twilight Princess did with that poor spinner.
Twilight Princess is so mean to so many of its items. There's a ton of excellent item concepts in that game, like the ball and chain or the Dominion Rod that we really just never see again in any other game and are barely used in the source game at all.
Oh yeah, that'd be interesting to have in this game, the spinner. And actually, when you mentioned it, dealing with the ball and chain and the Dominion Rod, I think that would be really fascinating to bring back those two as well. Especially the Dominion Rod, maybe possibly use it as a way they can revamp it and it can hook up to, like, I don't know, to the Sheikah Slate almost. And you could possibly, I don't know, control the Guardians? I think that'd be cool. Oh, that would be so cool.
That's a really good idea. And in that case, you know, you could use the Dominion Rod as something that can, like, control technology or something. And then you could kind of make it work a lot more like the song in, the name escapes me at the moment, but the song in The Wind Waker that would let you control other characters. But in Twilight Princess, you know, the character just mirrors your movement. You're still controlling Link the whole time. But in The Wind Waker, you actually get to take control of the character, which leads to fun moments in different dungeons where you get to play as different characters for a brief amount of time. And so, you know, actually letting you, you know, use it to take control of a guardian or something would be incredible. I remember that there was the April Fool's hoax pretty shortly after Breath of the Wild released that, you know, was some way you could take control of a guardian, and people were all over that because it's a really cool idea. So I really hope they try that.
I really hope so too. I think that would be very fascinating, and actually in a way it could possibly connect the story with Age of Calamity. I won't go into too much because I don't want to give spoilers for people who haven't played it yet, but there would be a little bit of a connection with that game towards Breath of the Wild and Breath of the Wild 2. I just think that would be personally fascinating. But we're kind of going a little bit onto a different topic, but kind of going back into the topic of the dungeons, there are quite a bit of different sites that we both have kind of noticed that they're almost unused. There's quite a bit of different areas where they just feel unused and it could easily become a dungeon. One of mine I feel like would be a perfect place for a dungeon that I felt was kind of unused a little bit. I mean, there are plenty of guardians there to just, you can go and grind for. And also there's the DLC treasure chest that you can also get there as well. But the Forgotten Temple, I feel like that could easily be a fascinating dungeon that someone could actually make it into. Where you could actually, I don't know, kind of like what we were talking about, figure out a way to control guardians. Kind of like what they did in, since you ended up bringing it up, in Wind Waker, where you can control the different statues. You can actually do it in the Forgotten Temple and be able to control different guardians.
That was for sure one of the coolest areas in the game that had the least to actually do with it. I remember coming across that, and it was such a cool moment, especially seeing that giant goddess statue and everything. But, you know, really there's not much there. And another area that I feel very similarly about to that one is Lake Promenade and the nearby Spider's Nest Mountain. That was an area I did just happen to stumble across when I was playing the game. I was just walking through that area and managed to come across it. And it's such a cool looking area and such a cool concept. Like this this town at the intersection of these rivers, kind of in the valley carved out by the river. And, you know, it's a really epic looking location, and the place next to it is called Spider's Nest Mountain. Like, if you're looking for a dungeon, I feel like that's about where you would look. But again, there's not really much there, and I think that it would be the perfect location for some sort of, like, kind of maybe ancient Hylian structure. My mind, when I just hear Spider's Nest Mountain and see the Lake Promenade area, is it definitely just goes to that 2012 teaser trailer for an HD Zelda game where Link is fighting that giant spider. And I don't know, I watched that trailer probably hundreds of times, and so, you know, I feel a little bit cheated, honestly, that we never fought a giant spider. So I hope they remedy that in Breath of the Wild 2.
Oh yeah, that would be absolutely just fascinating. Like, to be able to defeat a giant we did defeat a giant spider in Ocarina of Time. Maybe we could bring back Goma. That would be actually kind of cool. And actually, speaking of other dungeons that would be, or other places that would be really cool to have a dungeon, well, we kind of talked a little bit of the Forgotten Temple, but there's one that I think would be kind of cool if it was made into a dungeon. Thy Folo Ruins. I do apologize if I completely messed that up. But that's where the Dark Forest is, but possibly make that as a dungeon itself, even though it kind of already feels like a dungeon, but make it like more, almost like the Shadow Temple, but make it completely dark and make like almost kind of like what we ended up talking about last time about having the underground be open. Maybe there's an entrance in that particular area where there is an underground, and we could go and explore there, and it's completely dark throughout the whole entire temple. I think that would be fascinating.
That's a really cool concept, and it really does take the idea of a shadow temple, which it's so disappointing that we haven't really gotten a proper shadow temple since Ocarina of Time in a 3D Zelda game, and I think a lot of people have really wanted to see that idea come back, and those ruins are such a good idea. Just, you know, literally taking the concept of a shadow temple to the extreme and plunging the entire thing into darkness is such a cool idea. One of the other interesting areas that I've been thinking about is the statues of the six, and you later learn seven, heroines in the desert, in the Gerudo Desert. That was a really cool area to me, and it includes a shrine puzzle where you have to find these orbs that correspond to the correct statues and then place them in the statues, these little pedestals in the middle. You know, that's a really cool little quest thing that literally just gives you a shrine that gives you, you know, some kind of... It's not even a unique puzzle in the shrine. It's just one of those ones that gives you a chest. And that's more than any other area in the game. I feel like it feels like the entrance to a dungeon. It feels like that's the puzzle you do to get into the real challenge or something. But, you know, in the end, obviously, that puzzle is the challenge. But, you know, imagine you actually do put all of those orbs in there, and then it, you know, opens up and reveals, like, the entrance to a dungeon right underneath of that. I really think that would be very cool, and I do hope that they use that area and other areas in the game, because again, this we talked about it in our last episode, that you know, if you kind of take these areas that already exist in the game and recontextualize them by giving them dungeons, then you give the player a lot more incentive to go back and look more closely at the things that they kind of maybe just walked past in the original game because they knew there weren't dungeons.
Oh, absolutely. I think that would just be awesome. But anyway, we have just ran out of time. We've got so many different kinds of things dealing with dungeons, and we could keep going on and on and on about it. Lots of different sites that can be used as dungeons. Basically, all the stuff that we want is dungeons. Dungeons, dungeons, Nintendo, please. Dungeons. But anyway, so thank you guys so much for listening. I am the Zelda Ann, or Ann for short.
And I'm Realm.
And this is the Zelda Realm. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I hope you have an amazing day.
Bye.
Thanks, Ann and Realm. So, is there anything, Elias, that you want to see in Breath of the Wild 2?
Oh, great question. I would love if it was not called Breath of the Wild 2, first of all. Yeah, I mean, some of the obvious things, like making more fleshed-out dungeons, obviously, with also trying to keep their little open-air formula intact. Be curious to see them experiment more with that. Maybe make, if you're going to keep weapon durability, make them repairable in some way. That would be fantastic. I'm trying to tamper my expectations, whereas if I were expecting something like Twilight Princess 2, I'd have a laundry list. What about you?
I do think that your expectation for Breath of the Wild 2 to have a real title and not be called Breath of the Wild 2, I think that one, we can fulfill that one for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Zelda 2 is, I think, the only time that Nintendo is outright just...
Wasn't A Link Between Worlds called Triforce of the Gods 2 in Japan?
I think maybe, but that doesn't count because the translators decided it didn't.
Oh, okay.
Nintendo of America says no. But Breath of the Wild, I'm sure we will see the name of its sequel probably at this upcoming E3, so...
I think so, too, yeah.
If nothing else, even if they don't have a release date for us and it's still sometime next year, they're gonna
show something, yeah.
Show us something. Show us a trailer and a title reveal. Any guess on the title?
No.
Triforce of the Gods 3?
Yeah, it's all gonna be top down. It's gonna look eerily similar to the Link to the Past map. No, I have no. I listen, Cody. I've spent decades at this point being a bittered, hardened Metroid fan. And I spent years when I was younger going into E3s with my hopes high and excitement in my heart, because I had one at the time, looking forward to anything new about Metroid. And 9 times out of 10, I'd come out of that E3 heartbroken, crushed, depressed. And it's taught me over the years to not really go in with any expectations. So even when it comes to what is probably an assured thing that we're going to see something with this sequel, I don't have any expectations or specific things beyond that.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. I think we've got it a lot better off than Metroid, where, as far as consistency goes, there's been maybe 2 years in the last decade that we haven't had a Zelda release of some kind.
Must be nice.
Whereas Metroid, I guess, has had,
it's the opposite. We had one year, it's 2017, I think. We got two things. We got Samus Returns, which was only talked about in the Treehouse, and a teaser trailer for Metroid Prime 4, which we have not heard anything of since. Before that, yeah, Other M.
And when did Other M release?
That would be 2010, that it came out. I mean, I'm fine with it. I'd rather it be good, and if they've trained Metroid fans to be anything at this point, it's patient. So, I will wait.
Yeah, look, it could be worse. You could be a fan of, I don't know, The Legend of Dragoon for PlayStation 1.
F-Zero. for Nintendo.
F-Zero, you could be a fan of Star Fox and only be getting bad video games. So, on an unrelated note, Elias, I've heard that you've got a little bit of an announcement for us.
I do, actually. I'm glad that, that you brought this up, actually, Cody. Let me see here. Ah, yes.
And now for another installment of Fake Zelda History with Elias Thompson. While many assume that the first game in the Zelda timeline was Skyward Sword, the origins of the Zelda timeline can actually be traced to the first Metroid game, Metroid, and its remake, Metroid Zero Mission. In the game, space bounty hunter Samus Aran destroys the space pirate base on her former homeworld, Zebes, defeating all their Metroids and their leaders, Ridley and Mother Brain, in the process. The Zelda timeline then continues, with Samus handling events such as the Phazon Crisis, the genocide of the Metroids, and the return of Mother Brain in various games that canonically end in Metroid Fusion, where Samus destroys the X-Parasites. It's currently unknown how the events of Metroid Fusion lead into the creation of Hyrule and the events of Skyward Sword, but we'll perhaps find out if Nintendo decides to release yet another Zelda game that serves as a prequel to its predecessors, or literally any new Metroid game. This has been Fake Zelda History with Elias Thompson.
Thanks, Elias. Always good to have history corrected, to have, you know, the proper version of events be told. It's very valuable for our society.
I first revealed this, actually, for those astute Zelda Universe fans at PAX West a number of years ago. And it was quite the announcement then, as I'm sure it is to some of you listening now. So, glad that we had this opportunity.
So that about wraps it up for us for this month. Look forward to seeing Nintendo's new announcements that hopefully will include Zelda and hopefully will include Metroid. And also check us out across the internet, because Zelda Universe will presumably be doing some live streaming during E3. Is that right?
I believe the Twitch channel might be live streaming or co-streaming the Direct. If not, though, a lot of the talent from the Twitch will be co-streaming it, and then afterwards we'll all put our reactions together, or lack thereof, in a video for y'all to watch.
So that video will probably be found at youtube.com/ZeldaUniverseTV, and our live Twitch streams are at twitch.tv/ZeldaUniverseTV.
Lots of TVs.
Lots of TVs. It's TV is what we add when someone's taken it already, the username.
Don't tell them, because then they'll just take the name now. Now they'll just take Zelda Universe TV first.
Look, if they want to do that, then we'll play those mind games with them. We'll take Zelda Dungeon.
Andy and Allison are in the corner right now taking notes.
Yeah, we are all over the internet. You can, of course, follow our podcast, which you probably already are following our podcast. So, good job.
Proud of you.
Congratulations. But if you're not subscribed to the feed, you should go ahead and do that. If you can leave a review on your favorite platform of choice for podcasting, that does really help out. The algorithms are like, oh, people love this, because they're reviewing and commenting on it and that sort of thing. And then it boosts it up in the rankings. So, to help us become the number one podcast in the known universe.
Ever.
Ever of all time. We'd love if you could bring us some feedback and reviews. So,
only with your help can we become the podcast of time.
That's right. Or the podcast of... not the podcast of seasons.
Nope. Nope, that would be bad.
Because we want to release a podcast more than once per season.
Just like the game.
This has been Cody Davies, your number one webmaster over at Zelda Universe. And, of course, Elias Thompson.
Yes, I too am here.
That's right, your number one Metroid webmaster in the world. What is your Metroid website, by the way, Elias?
It was Metroid HQ.
Wow. And am I able to visit it today?
You can. Don't expect activity.
MetroidHQ.com. Oh, well, look. Someone posted a couple months ago in the forums.
Great.
This has been the Metroid Podcast, the Me-You cast, as we call it, and we'll see you next time.
Me-You?
Me-You, yeah.
What is that? Where did the E come from?
It's like Z-U. It's actually Med-You in a British or Australian accent.
But Z comes from the fact that it's called a Z unless you're Canadian or Australian. M is just M. It would be M-U. The E comes before the M.
But Me-You sounds like a horrifying Nintendo product combining
it does their that's why it alarmed me so much.
Combining their wish of adding the U to things to make it a sequel with
check out the Me-You, the new peripheral for the Metroid HQ website.
That's right. Look forward to the announcement of Me-You, everyone's favorite new Me and Metroid themed game being announced presumably at E3 this year. See you next time.
Oh, I'll see you, everyone. Goodbye. Eden, please save us.
You have just borne witness to another episode of the ZU Cast, brought to you by Zelda Universe. Now that it is over, you must listen to the credits. This episode's hosts were Cody Davies and Elias Thompson. Shona Johnson told you about 5 legendary years of Zelda history. Special thanks to the hosts of Zelda Dungeons Champions Cast, Andy Spiteri and Allison Aletha, for gracing the ZU cast with their presence. Realm and the Zelda Anne presented another edition of The Zelda Realm. Additional thanks go to Elias for trolling all of the Zelda theorists. The ZU cast is produced by Eden Biskin, who is me. Realm co-produces. Kelly Timmerman is the Lord Editor, Head Editor. Andy Bundy is the Assistant Editor. The podcast's social media liaison is Mary Stowe. It is the sworn duty of all social media users to be nice to her. The podcast's Zelda Universe Forums liaison is myself. The ZU Cast is a production of the ZUBC, a division of Zelda Universe's media team. You have an obligation to subscribe to ZU Cast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify, Stitcher, and/or on your favorite feed aggregator. If you fail to do so, you must then subscribe to Zelda Universe TV on YouTube, where you'll also find ZU Cast episodes in addition to Zelda Universe's epic Breath of the Wild dub. You should also give us feedback wherever you listen to the podcast, or by email at podcast@zeldauniverse.net, by internet discussion forum on Zelda Universe in Community Central's ZU Cast hub thread, or by social media at Zelda Universe on Twitter and Facebook, and at Zelda Universe TV on Instagram, YouTube, and Twitch. Remember your sworn duty, and be nice to Mary. Assuming you are listening to this just after release, E3 2021 is just over the horizon, and you should expect some Legend of Zelda-related news. Even if Nintendo deprives the masses of what they crave most of all, Zelda Universe will be following along with all of the announcements and bringing them to you in near real time. Follow ZU's social media outlets and its homepage, ZeldaUniverse.net, for all of the latest Nintendo-related news from the Electronic Entertainment Expo. And join the Zelda Universe forums to tell a small but passionate subset of the population how excited and/or furious each of the E3 announcements makes you. Nintendo's presentation is on June 15th, so join us. You have reached the end of the credits. And now, the ZUBC proudly presents Bloopers. You have reached the end of the credits. Excuse me. Oh my goodness.
Okay. Thanks, Anne and Realm. Thanks, Anne and Realm. Not happy with that. Thanks, Anne and Realm. Thanks, Anne and Realm. Thanks, Anne and Realm. Thanks, Anne and Realm.
Oh my god, stop.
Hopefully this does not scare poor Kelly. It's like, we did two episodes!
If you fail to do so, you must then subscribe to Zelda Universe TV on YouTube, where you're on blah, blah.
I mean, I'm fine with it. Like, okay. I'm just gonna wait for this dog to stop.